Comments on Serotalk Tech Chats are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotech Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers. Welcome to the latest Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. And now, here's your host, Michael Loft. And welcome to Serotalk Tech Chat number 80. This is Michael Loft, and our topic tonight, this month in access technology, as we look at some of the highlights for November 2010. Our guests this evening include Brad Hodges, the AFB, American Foundation for the Blind. Thanks for joining us tonight, Brad.
Well, it's great to be here. Greetings from Huntington, West Virginia.
Yes, and also joining us, Michael Barber with the Iowa Department of the Blind. He is the AT analyst. I had an analyst title before. It was kind of cool to be an analyst. Thank you, Michael, for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me, sir. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Oh, very.
I spend a lot of time on the couch.
But hey, it's a dirty job. Somebody's got to do it, right? Well, we're going to cover a lot of things here, and we're going to start and toot our own little horn here. But actually, I'm not going to say much, and I'm just going to get your comments. I'll start with you, Brad. See if either of you have played with Serotech's latest entry into the access technology arena, and that being the DocuScan Plus application.
I've been told my head is in the clouds often, but it's true. I have, and it's a fascinating and an interesting new approach to a technology that's very important, but that we haven't really heard a lot about lately, and that's OCR. It's a great way to approach this issue, I think, because so many of us are on the go. We aren't always where we want to be when we want to scan something or OCR something. The existing products are fairly large in terms of their footprint. You've got to install them. But with this cloud-based approach, we have a lot more flexibility, and the idea of using a camera is also pretty compelling, and I think it's a great start. So Serotech's to be congratulated, and I'm anxious to stay tuned and see where it goes.
Well, exactly. The first really online OCR, and you correct me a little bit, because certainly PDF conversion has been around for well over 10 years, but the first to let you bring in scanned documents. And, of course, we have a lot of other cool features, including the creation of Braille files from your scanned documents or PDF files, large print, RTF, MP3 audio, and even Daisy books for your portable players. So all cool stuff. Michael, have you played with it yet, sir?
I haven't yet. I was hoping to do that some this weekend, but I have read about the announcement. I've read about the features of the thing, and it just sounds very intriguing. Sounds like Serotech's done it again. In increasing opportunities for blind guys to really be on the go a lot more and be able to have access to what they need to access, when they need to access it, whether it's at home, on the job, on the road, wherever it is. And I think this is going to be a great product, and I'm looking forward to all future innovations of this thing.
All right, well, very good. The next thing I want to talk about, I don't know if any other AT's company is doing this. I'm not aware of it anyway. Serotech gift cards. So a lot of times people want to buy or give the gift of access technology but have no idea where to start. So we thought it might be cool to offer actual gift cards that you could go in anywhere from $10 up to $5,000. And that way, if you want to give someone then the gift of system access or DocuScan Plus, or maybe they want to get a year of SAMNet, all items that we have in our Buy Wizard, which also includes some hardware items. So I don't know. Any thoughts on that? Are we way out in left field? Or
I would always welcome a $5,000 gift card. They can send them care of AFB Huntington, West Virginia. I think it's a great idea. like your OCR efforts, Mike, it is an assistive technology company really getting with the modern world. Now, I'm old and gray and a little bit curmudgeonly, but I still think this is a good idea. And so for those folks who are out, you know, living kind of an Amazon lifestyle, meaning shopping at Amazon, that would be, I think it's a great counterpart to what is going on in the mainstream, and you're to be congratulated for it.
you know, Amazon does this. Other companies do these gift cards. You can go to Walmart. You can go to all sorts of stores and get gift cards. And I think Ceratec's on the right road here. It's a great marketing tool. And you guys are to be congratulated.
We're glad to hear that. I mean, you know, in the past, a lot of AT was bought through, you know, the government. And I think with the changes in the economy and Ceratec's always had more of a propensity of individual users or family members of users actually buying the AT for them. So, but your gift cards are getting more popular year after year. They really have over the last 5 years just exploded dramatically. So that is certainly an option there. Brad, you are a big Apple guy, so we're going to start with some Apple stuff. And I first want to talk about, because you mentioned some software last night to enhance the functionality of it, and that being Apple TV, now accessible with its iOS 4.1, not to be confused with the iOS 4.2 on the actual iPhone or Touch or so forth, but now adding VoiceOver. So why don't you talk about your experiences of playing around with Apple TV?
Well, let me step back for just a minute, Mike, if I might, and put my thinking here into some context. The issues of independent access to telecommunications and to video and other content that we have all around us have been really pretty difficult for blind and visually impaired folks. And the Congress and President passed and signed legislation, the 21st Century Video Access Act, and it is going to result in increased accessibility to video programming, increased video description, and make emergency information that is broadcast on television more available and more accessible. So in the context of this effort, in which AFB was pretty instrumental, we are now taking our leadership role very seriously and looking at the implementation side. It's great to get the legislation passed, but we have to step up now and help manufacturers, service providers, the FCC, and industry help design the best equipment, make the best regulations so that the legislation is carried out and things actually become accessible. So in that context, we're conducting research at AFB. We're looking at a number of issues, and we are acquiring a complete set of Apple technology. So we're going to be evaluating Apple TV, other Apple applications, including those from a company called Elgato, E-L-G-A-T-O. This is a video capture and real-time viewing. So it creates a TiVo-like or a personal video recorder-like functionality on a Mac. It's partially accessible, and so we think we're actually very close. And we'll be reporting on this, working with these companies, particularly Elgato, to help them make that completely accessible. So that's a starting or a departure point for some of the work we're doing at AFB Tech here in Huntington.
Okay, so you say the Mac. Is this also going to work directly on the Apple TV, or is it waiting? Because I know now you can install apps but can't run them yet, or what's going on there?
Well, from what I understand, Mike, the Apple TV is a way of controlling and accessing libraries of information and programming you have through iTunes. So if you have purchased movies, if you're renting movies, if you have your own content, music, photos, radio streaming, all of these content features can be accessed through the Apple TV. The Apple TV is a playback and control mechanism. It isn't like we used to think of Apple TV with a hard drive and an operating system of its own. It's the controlling end that dips into a whole rich environment. We can also go out and get Netflix with it too. And for those folks who haven't looked at Netflix through whatever screen access program you're using and browser you're using, I would also encourage folks to go have a look at Netflix. For $7.95, you can buy the streaming option, and it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I'd like to see it work a little better on the iPhone itself, unless the update has fixed some of the accessibility issues. I know some folks have been able to use it, but it's a little sketchy, but works great on the PC and the Mac. And
the iPad. The iPad exposes the controls very nicely, and the controls are going to be a little bit clunky because you're starting and starting and stopping a stream, you're not quickly moving through a file that's been downloaded to the device. So there is that latency if you want to go backward and forward. But it's interesting. I can watch it here at home and then stop a movie and I'm in the car. I can open it up on the iPhone and watch it, listen to it driving down the highway in the car.
Michael, did you have any thoughts before I go to my next story here, which is also iPhone related, talking about something they're going to do in iPhone 5 or very possibly are going to do?
I haven't used Apple TV yet. I was just talking to one of my colleagues this morning who just got it this, I think she just got it this week, and she is just really pumped with the whole thing. Maybe a little bit later on, I'll talk about some of my thoughts about the iPod and so forth. But as far as Apple TV, I haven't used it yet. Don't know if I will get that or not. But I'm enjoying my colleagues' experiences on the whole thing.
Okay. Well, this article I just put up here talks about iPhone 5 and an ambitious program to. One of the things Apple's looking at is being able to take your phone and wave it and use it basically as a credit card or purchasing device. But some of the other things that we're looking at here with this technology is the LCI, is the ability to actually transfer settings, basically go between one MacBook and another, and basically when you get within close range of this MacBook, all of a sudden all of your or many of your settings, including maybe even logins to Facebook, favorites for the web browser, email, a lot of different information would basically be stored on your phone. And then once the phone got out of reach of that Mac, that those settings would just magically disappear. I'm just curious, do you think this offers some great opportunity, or you have security concerns? I'm always a little paranoid when it comes to security, but this concept of having a lot of your personal information stored on the iPhone and just taking it between different Macintosh products and being able to use them with those preferences of yours.
Well, my first concern would be for security. I don't know. I have mixed emotions about that. We're in an age now where our personal information is just going every place, and I guess you can't be too careful, and I hope that Apple has thoroughly addressed those concerns before anything like this happens. But I can see where it'd be very advantageous.
What are your thoughts, Brad?
I think so. Fortunately, it's very easy to initiate VoiceOver on the Mac, so... On one hand, it would be an enhancement, but at the same time, happily, there isn't an enormous problem of making changes to settings to suit our individual taste. If we approach a Mac that is not using VoiceOver and may be configured in another way, as contrasted with, let's say, a Windows machine where really the best option in that kind of a mobile situation is system access to go. But it's an interesting concept. But like a lot of things Mac does, I suspect there's something of the trial balloon effect here, too.
Right. Just go ahead, Mike.
Unless I misunderstand here, with the Mac, you can already take and transfer your settings. I think, can't you... you can put them on a memory stick and then take them and move them from one Mac to another if that's what you want to do.
Right. I guess this is my concern being that if this stuff is stored on the iPhone and then when you're in close proximity, that data is already there. So what would happen, if someone found a way to just, basically as I used to do with the old analog cell phones where they could go and kind of steal information.
Intercept, yeah.
Right, intercept the information, or what happens if your iPhone gets stolen, things of that sort. I mean, it sounds awesome. If it really works, it sounds like a very cool concept that, if you're geeky like me and actually have two Macs in different places that you could, take your iPhone and move between them and or more importantly, a family members or something. But that may also get into the level of adoption.
One of the things that we confront as blind and visually impaired people is the need to conduct certain private secure transactions. Something as simple as using a debit card can often be anything but simple if the device if the point of sale device is not accessible. So I could see an advantage in as much as the Apple device in your pocket, if it is able to handle the secure portion of the transaction and does not require me to enter any information or disclose any information like a PIN or part of my social security number or things like that, it could be a real benefit.
Well, good point, right? Walking up to a kiosk in those stores actually be more secure from that standpoint. Yeah. You're not keying it in someone, there could not be a camera, someone watching over your shoulder and seeing what digit you punch in.
Right.
So very good point. Could actually be much more secure. Very good.
And there's a larger technology that I've just become aware of called near-field communication and near-field services. And this is something that the mobile phone industry is very keen to exploit. And I'm sure that it is in some part a response to this discussion and this Apple effort. I suspect the rest of the industry is going to want to have their own format to counteract the Apple format.
Exactly. This near-field communications offers some great promise for us in terms of accessibility. And, of course, those paranoid about security can deal with those issues as well. Another story I want to talk to both of you about, we've talked about this before, but another article posted this month talking about self-driving cars closer to reality. And, of course, we know of two efforts. We know what the NFB is doing and, of course, what Google has done, or maybe you don't know, but we've talked about these before in podcasts and tech chat. So I'll start with you, Brad, on your thoughts on this, and maybe even if people think, well, that's stupid to waste money and time trying to, you know, I don't want to drive a vehicle, but talk about some of the many possible applications that could come out of this, just as you gave a great example of us, making our way to the moon and all the technologies and the computers we use today as a result of our exploration of space.
I think both efforts are fascinating, and the NFB Blind Driver Challenge and the work at Virginia Tech, I think, have a couple of very important rationale. The first is that the process of driving a car requires processing a tremendous amount of stimuli through any number of channels. The amount of information that you must process in order to safely drive a vehicle is pretty significant. And developing strategies and techniques for doing that non-visually, I think, is a very important and potentially very far-reaching effort. The world technology, the world around us, is an increasingly complicated place. And if we can apply the strategies that are successful to help someone safely drive a car, dealing with a complex computer interface or some other complex reality, pedestrian travel can be equally complex. If we can apply those technologies in these situations, I think there may be some very exciting developments at hand. I was part of a group the other night discussing telecommunication and telecollaboration, conference calls and webinars. And one of the common threads in the conversation was how difficult it can be to track all of the things that are happening on the screen, the things that are happening listening to other participants, and sometimes even needing to layer your own reader with you in your office dealing with visual material. So 3, 4, 5 different streams of information all coming in your ears. I was thinking then, what if we could apply some of the lessons that will be learned from that effort in something as simple as attending a webinar? So I think it's an interesting and fascinating opportunity, and I'm anxious to see what happens at the Rolex race at Daytona. I'm half tempted to go down and take a look.
Well, I have a thought, but I want to hear from you first, Michael, on your thoughts on either the two different technologies, if you know what you thought, if you think one is superior to the other, or they maybe should be collaborating, working together, or are they two totally different objectives?
Well, I have experienced a little bit of what the NFB has been doing last year. Got to take a look at a little prototype that Virginia Tech was working on, where we, you know, put a glove on our left hand, and then the vibrations, in your fingers through this glove, told you whether you should turn a sharp left a sharp right, whether you should stay straight. You know, my first attempt was quite clumsy trying to figure the whole thing out. Now, but I think they're making a step in the right direction. It's, you know, I'm glad that they didn't go the route of, you know, put these headphones on and listen to the speech prompts. I'm glad they didn't do that. Now, Google's attempts, I think, are also in the right direction. I've thought for quite some time now, if they can computerize an airplane and that thing can fly pretty much by itself, I've always felt that there's no reason why a car couldn't do the same thing. And I think Google's on the right path. I think both approaches are right. I think everybody, whether they drive a car or not, are going to benefit from whatever comes out of all of this. I remember people used to complain, oh, we shouldn't be going to the moon and so forth. But my brother, who worked for NASA, told me all the medical inventions and a lot of the other technological inventions, you know, the transistors and so forth, came out of our space exploration and our space program. So I look at this as saying that we're going to really advance technologically a long way with these projects, and I'm all for it, and I hope I get to drive one.
Yeah, they both sound innovative in their own ways. I'm more excited about the Google project, honestly, because, and maybe I haven't read enough, no, I definitely haven't read enough about all the internals of the way the NFB project works, but just traversing a no left and right and zigzags and the road and changing lanes and things of that sort, what I'm not sure what the NFB challenge does is how does it help you anticipate for wrong moves made by other drivers who are missing their cues because they're talking on their cell phones? And the Google project looks like it addressed some of those things a little more thoroughly. At least it was documented. Does anyone have any thoughts on that before we move on?
I'm sorry.
I don't know what the specific techniques are, but very clearly, the bottom line, of course, is if either of these strategies come to bear and become practical, whoever is behind the wheel in whatever kind of car will need to take the same driver's test as everybody else behind the wheel in their car presumably took. And I think you're right, Mike. We need to really make sure everybody has a clear understanding of the techniques and the advantages and disadvantages of each strategy as we move forward. And it's a long-range target and a long-range goal, too. You know, we're not going to have a blind guy's driving the 2012 Volt, I don't think.
No, even Google said theirs is 10 years down the road. DARPA,
if we look at the DARPA challenge, though, the DARPA challenge only a few years ago, no vehicle would pass it, and that was in open desert terrain. They now have completed successful DARPA challenges in urban environments, and so the rate and pace of that acceleration, as an example, is just amazing.
Michael, you had some thoughts before we go to our next topic?
No, go ahead. I agree with what Brad was saying.
Okay, very good. Well, let's see what's up next here. Experimental program for blind users, allowing them to use Windows 7 touchscreens. So I guess we'll just talk about touchscreen technology in general. I mean, we all, you know, we got excited in our capabilities with iOS and what we could do on the iPhone. But let's talk about the next level of that, either Braille on touchscreens or some kind of haptic tactile type feedback or shapes or using it for GPS or some other uses. What I'll start with you, Brad. What have you seen other developments beyond what we think of in just iOS touchscreens?
We're actually working on some things at AFB right now. We anticipate that the touchscreen is going to be an increasingly common and popular interface strategy on all types of devices, from ATMs to personal devices such as phones and iPods or iPads. And what we're looking at in a little sliver of that whole large picture is gesture-based technology. We have had a group under contract to build what we're calling a gesture recorder, which will allow us to ask people to make gestures on a tablet for about 10 different functions that you would associate with a remote control. And we will then be able to play those back to them, so to speak, and ask them to repeat the gestures and find out just how well people are able to match their gestures. There are going to be a lot of complex things that we're going to want to do with these devices. For example, if we think about an electronic program guide filling a tablet, we aren't in a real good position to just point to what we're looking for, and moving up and down 200 rows a line at a time to find out what show you want to watch is a little tedious. So if we can have the device give us groups of information that we want, let's say we want to watch all the movies that start at 8 o'clock, or I want to know when the next NFL football games are, if I could associate a gesture with those types of requests, how would I do it, and what would that gesture look like? So that's one of the things that we're investigating right now, Mike, in that really important arena of touchscreen technology.
You have any thoughts on that, Michael?
Well, anything that we can do in the future to give us an advantage in touchscreen technology is going to help all of us.
And what this article was talking specifically about, this one was something called audio screen. They were using the whole seeing with sound concept, that you actually use audible cues in conjunction with where your finger is on the screen and things of that sort.
Right. I can see where that can be helpful. I'm just thinking about myself.
Is it overload for the brain? I mean, to have audio cues or... I like the tactile concept. Would you use some, say you had a tactile GPS type of, well, we saw some prototypes where you would actually, as you get near to your destination, there's some kind of tactile display showing you where you are in relation to your starting and endpoints and things of that sort, and or Braille. So there's a lot going on there.
Yeah, there's an awful lot. That sounds like it's something that's going to be very busy, and it'd be a lot to take in. So, having never gotten to look at one of those things or look at that concept, I don't know. I can just only imagine that for me, it would be something that would be awful busy, and it would be something that I'd really need to concentrate on to learn. But if we can get something that will give us an advantage. We've got to do this because, unfortunately, touch screens are in and they're not going to go away.
Well, I mean, it's interesting, and we could I'm calling you Brad. Let me just throw this thought out, and you can answer. I mean, my concern has always been, can you get too many things going on? Can we just throw things out there, and then they either fail because, they weren't adopted or no one saw the logic in them and testing and getting all these things out into the hands of people who can really use them and test markets. I mean, I've seen so many great projects start and die in the garage. But, Brad, what did you want to say?
Well, I want to step back for a minute. I really regret that a non-visual mouse, the search for that or the development of that was never pursued. Quite a number of years ago, I remember a device that looked like a mouse on a stick, and the stick went into a box about the size of a shoebox, and you slid the mouse back and forth and up and down, and when you encountered the icons, you heard them as you would navigating your desktop with a screen reader, but you felt a little vibration as you entered the boundary. Inside the boundary was the icon, and then you moved out of the boundary, and I regret that. I had the good fortune when I worked for the NFB to use the KGS tactile display, where I could actually explore fonts, print fonts tactily, and really got to know what they were like, and it was very interesting. And both of those memories trigger in me a really keen interest in access techniques and in ways of interrogating a screen that go beyond an up, down, back, forth, sequential, braille, or auditory rendering of the screen. I think the iPad is a splendid example of having your either strategy. You can move back and forth, you can flick back and forth and sequence it all, or you can get out there and touch it and interact with it.
But you can actually see how a web page is laid out and see, and then actually... you know, tap the story and then put your finger in the middle of the screen just where visually the text to be read is actually displayed. And really, when I played around with my friend's iPad, I got a much better feel for website layout than I'd ever seen before. I agree with you. The mouse was, I remember back, you know, 10 years ago, I had one of the ones with the large trackball, and it was kind of neat to move around. And you know, when you moved up and to the right, okay, here's these icons, and here's what's going on the screen. I'd like to see much more evolution in that front as well. I agree with you.
Well, System Access, in fact, for large print users, I think does that very successfully, integrates an excellent audio and visual feedback. And in fact, we did some testing at AFB in Dallas where we really were able to observe the success of that by doing a few things together, by using a mouse pad so people had a visual and tactile screen reference, so you weren't kind of just moving the mouse endlessly on an open table, so that the pad had boundaries, sort of like your screen had boundaries. So there was this relationship, this correspondence between where your hand was and what was going on, and it's very successful for people, for a lot of people at least.
Well, I put up here actually about a minute ago the story about access, or actually no access, to Windows 7. And you know, part of me thinks, well, why should we care? The technology is going to die. But we certainly don't know that, and we can't make any assumptions. And, Brad, you made a good point last night that this Windows mobile operating system is the embedded technology and things like voting machines and other technologies. So we need to really be concerned about Microsoft not including accessibility in Windows Mobile 7.
I think we do. And to Microsoft's credit, they called together a meeting of all of the stakeholders, my organization, the consumer organizations, RNIB from the United Kingdom, CNIB from Australia, from Canada, and Blind Citizens Australia, and from colleagues who attended the meeting, the word was they were very sincere in their commitment. They are very acutely aware of the extent to which the ball was dropped in terms of accessibility. But I also sensed, from what I heard and what I've read, you know, in mainstream media, of an absolute desperation in Redmond, and clearly the system has been completely rewritten, and that was just something they didn't do. So to their credit, they recognize that, and they are making efforts, commitments at a very high level. On the other side of the ledger, we have a significant operating system introduced without accessibility, and at least I would expect a two-year timeline before something meaningful could come around.
Yeah, you were talking about your gesture-based project you're working on, because when we first looked at some of the new things that the new 360 was going to do, and some of the gesture-based that people could do for dancing or learning, you know, we thought even blind people could use it even to learn how to effectively travel and cane techniques, or just playing games or interact, you know. I mean, so many uses that this technology could have.
Yeah.
So I certainly hope some more is done in that space as well. We got an article here talking about Microsoft has a patent to bring Braille to touchscreens. I thought I read earlier that Apple has a patent in that same space. Do you think we could have a war over Braille touchscreens?
Oh, wouldn't it be wonderful? Two corporate behemoths arguing over which has the best Braille standard, best Braille
access. not even the best, but who has the first. I patented it first, so mine might be substandard, but I've got the patent, as so often happens.
What a wonderful prospect.
Now, Brad, I know you're really into the Mac. What do you think about ABC? They're supporting now iPal and ZoomX on the Mac. First of all, is ZoomX going to be necessary? But what are your thoughts on them getting into the Mac space?
I'm not sure. Certainly the availability of VoiceOver and the general resurgence of the Mac. I think certainly, you know, creates a lot of opportunities for bringing assistive technologies that have been associated with Windows exclusively into the Mac domain, and I think it might provide some opportunities for some new players in the field. And I think that's always innovative, because if someone comes up with something innovative for the Mac, and it's their first AT product and it does well, then the opposite can also be the case in that it could be ported for a successful Windows product for those of us using Windows as well. So I think it's exciting, and we'll see what, you know, we'll see what makes it and what doesn't.
I mean, you made a really good point that, I mean, the advances that Apple's been making are just nothing less than significant, but yet if Rehab buys us Mac products and yet we can't go and procure employment because the employers are still in the Windows world, then how good is the technology for us, even though it's a great technology? So that, again, comes back to the 9-to-5 versus 5-to-9 concept.
Right, or it comes back with as a practical strategy, putting a dual system together. But I think, and Mike, you can speak to this. The training is an enormous issue, and this goes back to: do we train for screen reader A versus screen reader B? Do we train for one because it's the more prominent one, or because that's what our trainers know? How do we facilitate client choice? Et cetera. And so there's a similar, I think, dynamic if we choose Mac Windows.
Well, Mike, I want to ask you about training.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that, about Mac training, one of the hardest things for us as trainers is to get people to understand that when you step up to the Mac, you have absolutely got to forget everything you know about Windows.
Well, I would disagree with that, but I'm going to let you go first. But
okay, because I think they're two totally different concepts, and I'll be interested to hear your side of it too. But you know, people when they start training on the Mac, they say, well, that's not the way we did it in Windows. Well, of course it isn't. It's different. It's voiceover is quite a bit more keystroke intensive, I think, but it's very usable, and it's something that I took some training with a company last June. Don't know if we're allowed to say names over this or not, but it was a 3-day training, and I really fell in love with the Mac after that. It was a great training course, and it helped me a lot when I then bought my iPod Touch about a month and a half ago. I was glad I had my Mac training because when I got my Apple Wireless keyboard, it really was beneficial to me to have learned that. And so...
Well, yeah, if you found a great 3-day training program out there, by all means, you can certainly mention who
offered Handytech.
That. Right. I thought that's... Well, Handytech. No, Handytech has been a good friend with Serotech, and we certainly have no problem promoting their efforts.
Earl Harrison and his staff are excellent teachers. And we... There was, I think, 5 or 6 of us, and we all came away from that thing. In fact, you know, Earl gave us the choice of filling out the evaluation form later or doing it then. And I thought, you know, I've got my Mac in front of me. I might as well use the skills I learned on Safari. And I filled out that form with absolutely no trouble at all. And I was so excited about that because, you know, a couple of days before that, there's no way I would have been able to have done that. But the Mac, I mean, you know, using iTunes on the Mac is so awesome compared to using it in Windows. And I don't care, you know, what kind of script you use, whether you use, you know, products that help. Using iTunes on the Mac is much, much easier.
Yeah, there's something to be said for a native use versus porting over to another operating system. I do have to move on. Unfortunately, Brad was correct. We have too much to cover, and we're down to 20 minutes, and we're going to open up for questions very shortly. So
I wanted to hear why.
Oh,
why.
No, I guess part of it is because, at least in learning Windows, they learn the keyboard. And then there are things like Command-Tab. Granted, it's a different term, but Alt-Tab, Command-Tab, the same process to move between applications. And just the function of the key, you know, just learning that the control is the same, and You know, Alt's the same, except they call it Command. I agree. If people get literally stuck on certain keyboard combination sequences, then yes, they are going to have a very difficult time. I'm curious if somebody started with the Mac before Windows, if they would say the same thing going into Windows, saying, well, you know, this doesn't work the way the Mac does.
Here's what I'd say about that, Mike. I think what you're referring to are certain functions which are going to be, regardless of what operating system you're using, Linux or Mac or Windows, you have to know where focus is. And the concept of focus, you know, is true on a voting machine, it's true on an ATM, it's true on an iPod, it's true on a Mac machine, a Windows machine, a Linux machine. There is such a thing as focus. And I kind of, what I'm hearing you say is maybe those are sort of the enduring concepts that we do have to kind of track and keep track of. Is that some of what you're getting at?
Yeah, to some extent. And I'm really curious when, you know, when 10.7 comes out next summer, and if they really do incorporate and make it function more like iOS in a certain way that you can actually navigate and flick, and they come up with a combination, you know, after we bought our keyboards and the trackpads, they come up with a combination keyboard trackpad where we're using the Mac a little bit more like an iOS device, if that's going to open up ease of use to people. But yeah, basically that's what I'm saying, is that it gets you some orientation with computers and the way they work. So I just, when you say forget everything, if you said forget most, or, you know, you need to come into this as if, you know, with an open mind to all new ways of doing things, I'd agree. But when someone says forget everything, that makes me, because there were things that I was able to port in from Windows, like you said, just understanding of computing in general.
Sure.
But
I'll accede to that. I understand what you're saying.
Right. But you are right. If you go into it thinking, well, I'll just learn a couple differences between Windows and Mac, you are going to be. And a lot of it is voiceover. And a lot of it is the way that the Mac works, where it expects you to do things like a sighted person does, and you have that whole level of interaction. Whereas part of that problem comes from our screen readers, the Windows screen readers, modifying the behavior to, quote unquote, make it easier for us to use. And then we don't have a real concept of the way that things are done. That's probably part of it as well. But I'm going to enable questions so that our many people listening can throw out their two cents as well. Real quickly, any of you played around with Android? Did this Spiel, the new free screen reader released into that, does that make a difference? Or do you, my thinking that Google's really dropping the ball on accessibility and expecting everything to be retrofitted and really holding us back? Or
first of all, you'd have to have people all being able to count on using the same version of the operating system, and then the machinery would all have to have the same kind of chips and run the same. It's a wild, wild west. We had intended to do some development on a $150 tablet. Turns out that from sample to sample of the same tablet, the internal components are completely different. It's a wild west in terms of hardware, especially in version control. So as a practical matter, it is just something that I don't think we're going to see for a while. You've got to bump up to a $600 Galaxy to make sure that my machine is the same as the machine the development is taking place on. And that's a real barrier.
Yeah, I mean, we need pioneers. I'm glad we have pioneers that are out there pushing the envelope and seeing what it's capable of doing.
I agree, but as a practical matter to exploit a device. Now, this is an Android device where we don't have to have service, mind you. We didn't want to be developing things on a machine that was going to cost someone $50, $60 a month to operate.
Okay, so someone points out here that Tina's actually doing well with Android. There is now an accessible email program, an accessible web browser, and she's also using Google Maps for GPS navigation, and she's using several third-party radio apps that work well. So we certainly don't want to say it's not worth investing in. I just think we all would like to see a little more from Google, and I think Brad's point is well taken, that you have to really be careful which phone you get and get into that space. You can't just go down your store and be glad to take whatever the salesperson hands you. You're going to have to do a little research.
And at AFB, our development work in the video, when I was talking about the gesture recorder, these are on devices that are not provided by a telephone carrier. These are freestanding tablet devices, so please understand that my comments are confined to that universe. of technology.
Well, let's see how you'd answer this question. Santiago asks, should I wait to get an Android phone over the next year? I mean, that's a tough call. I would say, well, do you need something right now? What are you using right now?
I dropped my crystal ball on the way into the den here, Mike.
I don't even know how to answer a question like that. I mean, I think that comes down to, you know, are you more intrigued and are willing to accept some compromises and going with more of a closed proprietary system that Apple uses that gives you greater across-the-board accessibility, or are you one of those cutting-edge people that wants to play around? And, you know, of course, what you get today and what's available a year from now, I mean, part of that's going to depend on your personality.
Make sure you go to accessworld@afb.org and read up on which phones are going to be your best bets. We spend a lot of effort, and Darren Burton, my colleague, is probably one of the most knowledgeable people in the country about this subject, has devoted himself to this for many years, cell phone accessibility, PDA accessibility, and we do try to publish and share as up-to-the-minute information as we can for folks at Access World.
Someone, Josh, here makes a very good point. It says that the state of Windows Mobile reminds me of what it was like when Apple switched from OS 9 to OS 10, because there was a period, as Joe will tell you, and it's why we need to sometimes reserve our optimism for Apple, because there was a time that they, for cost-cutting measures, just kind of got rid of accessibility, and it took a few years before it got back to where it was.
Well, the previous accessibility technique was a third-party effort, which mirrored the state of Windows accessibility at the time, and Mac fell into such a state of decline that I don't think it made any sense for them to continue developing it.
Well, that is true, and they were financially, they had a lot of issues. I mean, Apple's a true American success story if you really read the history of what they've gone through. But I want to ask you mentioned that we need to get involved with the FCC. I guess I should take this question first, because it'll nag me if I don't. But I would want to mention this because December 7th is a deadline for comments in terms of the new accessibility and video. The new law that's been passed. But so far, supposedly, no blind persons have commented, and Jamal Masri has compiled a zip file over at empowermentzone.com, and I will add it to the show notes after the show here. So we need to get involved because, as of right now, the blind community is not represented in this space, it would seem like.
Yeah, if that's the case, shame on all of us, because and myself included, because we can't expect the FCC to know what we need unless we tell them what's important. And if we don't tell them, then shame on us.
And December 7th is a date which will live in infamy, as we well know, and it would be a particular date in infamy if we don't step up. But I want to let people know that this idea of commenting to the FCC is not something for which one needs to go to law school or to have a degree or credential of any particular kind. It's a process that is remarkably different from what it used to be. It's written in plain English. You can respond using Word and a web browser in plain English, and it's a fantastic opportunity to get involved. So go check it out, and a big shout out to Jamal, who's always the guy who gives us the nuts and bolts to do and what we need to do with all this stuff, too.
And we need to bring him on to a really good show on advocacy, him and Kelly Pierce and some of the folks out there fighting in the trenches every day to make this stuff happen. Quick question here, getting a few backed up. Santiago asks, what will happen to Code Factory since Mobile Speak won't work on Windows Phone 7? Well, first of all, I think Code Factory's diversifying itself into some other things to hedge against that, but that certainly doesn't mean that Windows Phone 7 won't be usable in the future, even if it is a year or two down the road. But I don't know if any of us are in a position to know what Code Factory is doing in those regards. That's my answer, unless any of you two have anything to add to it. The other one, Margaret asks, how about the use of a tactile tablet and use of point-of-sale terminals to help the visually impaired persons find a place for their signature? Have you seen anything like that?
We have seen, for example, a strategy is used in the Target stores in which a physical overlay is set atop the screen. Now, this is to enter your PIN, in the case of using a debit card. And there are large buttons, very easy to feel, and they have little nubbins on the back of them that contact the screen where the numbers go. Yes, those types of things are certainly something that folks could do. I think a lot of folks have techniques for finding and keeping on the line on the point of sale machine for signing your name, feeling the top edge or the bottom edge, using a straight edge like a credit card or something like that to line it up if you'd like.
Could you use a signature guide on those or no?
A little one, maybe. A business card would work.
Yeah.
I want to talk about this NFB complaint against Penn State and see what both of you know about what's really going on there. I think, Brad, you'd said that there was only one accessible ATM on the entire Penn State campus.
Well, and I have no reason to doubt what was stated about it, but that was my understanding. As I see the public information, that's all the information I have access to, but as I see the public information, there are a whole myriad of issues. And as the recipient of vast quantities of public funding, a major university very much has a responsibility to use that funding to provide accessibility in whatever form it needs to be provided, ensuring that there are accessible ATMs for students and faculty to use, making sure the content of the courses is accessible, that the systems that deliver that content are accessible, that classroom technology is accessible for both instructors and students. And I think that it's a real good example of sort of, you know, the death by a thousand paper cuts kind of effect. It's not just one thing.
Michael, do you have any thoughts based on your NFB involvement on that?
I don't really have any more to add. I don't have any more access to information about that, I guess, than Brad has, but I definitely agree. They have access to all this public money, and it's their responsibility, as far as I'm concerned, to make sure that there's plenty of accessibility there in whatever area needs it. And so I would concur with what Brad says.
Okay, I got a question here. I guess my page link had changed or something. There was talk that the ADA, they want to go through and really do some updates and mandate some more for online companies by 2012, including things like making websites accessible to blind users, maybe even installing terminals for the deaf and movie theaters and things of that sort. Are you guys really for government mandates, or do you like to see the private sector try to work it out? Do you think it just doesn't work unless the government gets involved? Where do you two stand on that? And I'll start with you, Brad.
Oh, I think it's unavoidable. The only consistent, broad-based advancement in web accessibility has been as a result of mandate. Regrettably, that is the cold reality. All theorizing and political discussion really pales in comparison to that reality.
That's true. I agree with what Brad says. I wish we didn't have to have these kind of mandates. I wish it'd be nice if people would just, you know, understand, yeah, we need to make this stuff accessible. But I don't think it's I think it's unavoidable. I think it's got to be.
There's all kinds of mandates out there. You've got to drive on the right side of the street. You can't go down I-64 at 100 miles an hour if you feel like it, or 30 miles an hour if you feel like it. People do things because they have to, and that includes designing a web page.
There's an article here talking about how let me see. I got another question here. Mike, let's stay away. He wants to talk about why the API needs to be redesigned for Android. Why don't we save that for an actual Android tech chat? I think would be more efficient there. I want to talk about this article saying that 200,000 people could have at least some of their sight restored, those suffering from RP. My question, I posed this to Brad last night, so I'll start with you, Brad, and then Michael. Are we perhaps on the wrong track by setting up hopes for people that, you know, wow, I'm going to just not do anything until I get my sight back? Or should we look at it as an enhancement for them to do things better? Or does it really keep people from living their life to the fullest? What do you guys think about that?
I think it's a real, real dilemma. If we look to the experience of the deaf community, and we always have to be very careful doing that, but there was a great deal of controversy when cochlear implants became available. Some likened it to cultural annihilation. Others talked in more gentle terms about functionality. As a blind person, I do not consider myself a broken-sighted person. I'm an intact person. If I could get some vision back, but I would still not be a 20/20 person, I think I would tend to view myself in a very different manner, and I think in a less healthy manner, because I would neither be blind and part of a very rich and vibrant community, nor would I be real functional as a sighted person. I'd be in this sort of in-between zone, really dwelling on visual acuity. Now, that being said, there are a lot of advantages to having some vision and using low vision and non-visual techniques. And if a person is well-grounded and can integrate that, more power to them. But I hope that the cost of getting to that point isn't too high.
I remember when I first was hearing about the cochlear implants, I was really surprised when I heard that deaf people were just like, no way, we don't want to do this. It kind of surprised me. And then as the more I thought about it, I thought, you know, if some of these people have never heard, I can understand their hesitancy. I've never been able to see. So would I participate in any kind of activity or any kind of project that would give me sight? I don't know. I honestly can't say whether I would or wouldn't, because I've never had it. So I've, you know, it's something I've never missed. Now,
exactly. There's issues. Could our brains even process the visual stimuli if it were available? Some think not. MIT's doing a project. They believe that maybe that is possible. So there's a whole gamut
and then you have the problem of, if you've never been able to see, even if they could fix that part, the impact on you mentally would be just unbelievable, because of all the images that would all of a sudden be smashing on your brain.
Well, exactly. You see Mike May talking about, I don't mean to cut you off, we're just about out of time, Mike May talking about going skiing for the first time after getting his visual stimuli. If he didn't close his eyes, he would have had an accident, you know, because it was just too much new information when he was used to working without that. Mm-hmm. Gentlemen, we are out of time. I want to thank you, but I do want to give you 1 minute or so here each for final comments, if you like. Brad, what would you like to leave our listeners with tonight?
I thoroughly enjoyed myself. This is a fantastic forum. Sarah Talk is a marvelous resource to the community. I hope that at AFB we're doing work that is important and meaningful and relevant to people. We invite you to visit us at afb.org for all of our programs, Access World, Family Connect, Career Connect, and Senior Site. And please reach out to us, write to us, and let us know what you think, and let us know what we can do.
Very good. Michael, your thoughts, sir?
And I want to thank Sarah Tech for inviting me to come and appear here tonight. I'm president of the NFB Assistive Technology Trainers Division. We have our meeting in July at every NFB convention. I invite any of you to come. You're all welcome. It's an awesome group. We explore all sorts of different things having to do with training students in orientation centers and training clients and so forth. I just really appreciate the opportunity. Thanks a lot.
Well, thanks a lot. Now, you're doing a lot of great work up there in Iowa, just as Brad and AFB are doing. So we invite you to check out both of these organizations, all their great work, and assist them when at all possible. We invite you to join us next week, December 9th. We're going to talk about what's new with NFB Newsline. In addition to all the newspapers, they got a cool service called NFB Potable. That you can basically customize your own newspaper with local, state, and national news, and a growing number of magazines. Also, they're rolling out some career listings, and we'll learn more about that. Also, you can join us and continue the discussion in the Cerotech Tech Chat Room over at SamNet. So you can go over there if you're a member of SamNet. If not, go grab you a 7-day trial account at www.sa2go.com. Thank you, both of you gentlemen. Your information has been very valuable and informative for many of us. So until we meet again next week, we invite you at Cerotalk to stay connected and stay directed. This concludes another Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. Until we meet again, stay connected and stay directed.